Welcome to another edition of Between the Bubbles. I am Braden. Obviously, you can't hear Darren's voice. That's because this week we're going to be doing something a little bit different. There are some exigent circumstances that have come up that are going to make it impossible for the two of us to record the podcast together. And consequently, we're going to each record our reviews separately, and then we'll integrate them together into one big happy episode. What's happening, my wife and I are going out of town this weekend. It's her brother's wedding on Saturday when we would normally be recording, and there's just not going to be any time for us to even record over Skype, the two of us. So it's a shame that the two of us can't do it together, but, you know, we wanted to have an episode for you guys anyway and to have our reviews of our weekly comics, because otherwise we would have so much to review in the next episode. It would just be like madness. I mean, I personally have a lot of comics. I think 9 comics this week, and I know Darren's going to have quite a few as well, so it should be a fun episode. But anyway, that's the situation. Obviously, I'm recording this in the middle of the week instead of at the end of the week, which means that I don't have access to all of the news that has happened, but there's one piece of news that I think is important enough to mention right now, and that is that Joss Whedon has been announced as the writer and director of The Avengers 2, so he will be writing and directing the sequel to everyone's favorite movie, and, well, at least my favorite movie. I know Darren's going to say The Dark Knight Rises is better, but it's okay. I love him. He can be wrong sometimes, too. Also, we mentioned last week that ABC TV is very interested in having an Avengers film, or not an Avengers film, but an Avengers TV show, or something related to the Avengers universe on TV, and Joss Whedon is the one who will be developing that. For those of you who don't know, I'm a huge Joss fan. I've loved 3 of his 4 TV series, and Dollhouse was still pretty good. It wasn't as good as the other 3, but it was still pretty good. And he hasn't made a bad movie so far. So I'm sold on the idea of a Marvel Universe TV show, whether it's a crime procedural or something related to S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever it is. I'm sold on the idea, and I want it to happen. But we'll see what happens. So that's our only piece of news this week. So now I'll share my reviews for this week. As always, alphabetical, first by publisher, and then by title. So we'll start with the Dark Horse stuff. I actually had more Dark Horse this week than I had anything else, which was kind of astonishing to me because that rarely, if ever, happens. First off, we have Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's issue 12 of season 9. It's the second part of the Guarded storyline. In this storyline, Buffy, like I mentioned before when we talked about it, is now working as a security guard for one of her former slayers. And basically, this issue is them trying to shut down this influential website. Basically, it's a Facebook-style website because it's a portal to a hell dimension, and the hell dimension can communicate with the real world through this website. It's a little confusing, but It's a solid issue. It's not a perfect issue, but it's a solid issue. I miss Joss Whedon writing it. I feel like Andrew Chambliss does a good job, but not necessarily a great job with the writing. He captures a pretty true-to-form Buffy voice, but not a perfect Buffy voice. Not as good as when Joss writes the comic. But Georges Gentil does great on the art still. It looks like it belongs with the rest of Buffy season 8 and season 9, and it's a good looking book. It ends in a good twist. It's got me really excited for the next issue, so that's always a good sign. This one I'm definitely going to give it an explore it to. It's not a perfect issue by any means, but it's a good issue. It's a solid issue. Next up is a comic I've never actually read before, but I love the artist and the writer, and I heard that this was a good stepping on place if you were going to get into this comic. It's Conan the Barbarian. Again, my only relationship with Conan is the movies that came out in the 80s, the first of which is great. Conan the Barbarian is, like, so over the top that it's wonderful, and Conan the Destroyer wasn't as good to me. It lost a little bit of its teeth when they dumbed it down to the PG rating. But, you know, they're solid films. They're good adventure films. You know, they're Arnold Schwarzenegger at his very muscliest. And there's a scene in Conan the Barbarian when he drunkenly punches a camel in the head and it falls over dead. It's hard to find better stuff than that in a movie. There's no more heavy metal moment that I can think of in a movie than Conan punching a camel in the head and killing it. Anyway, this is issue 7, actually, of the new Conan the Barbarian monthly by Dark Horse. But it was listed as a good stepping on point for new readers. It's written by Brian Wood with pencils by Becky Cloonan and coloring by Dave Stewart. Becky Cloonan is another name you'll hear later on when we talk about Batman. She's a phenomenal artist, and I was excited to pick up two of her books this week. This isn't the Conan that we're used to. He's not built like a freight train. He doesn't look he doesn't look like just a muscle. He's a compassionate and interesting Conan, is what we see here. And he has a really interesting relationship with Belit, who is his lover, who's the captain of this pirate vessel, from the more, you know, arid and tropical regions of this planet they live on. This issue is them going back to Conan's home. Someone is impersonating Conan and perpetuating atrocities in his name. And so Conan is going back to find out what's going on to try to stop him. And he's taking Belit with him. It's great to look at. Becky Cloonan's pencils, or Becky Cloonan's art in general, I guess she does the penciling and the inking, is just great. Belit is emotive and fascinating as a character. Conan is more than just a meathead. I really liked this issue. I didn't think I would like it. I'm not a Conan kind of guy. I'm not a swords and sorcery kind of guy usually. But this was a very solid issue. So I'm interested to go and read issues 1 through 6 when they get collected. And I think I'll be picking up this book from now on, at least for the foreseeable future. This was a great stepping on point if you want something new and something that's outside of the realm of superhero books. In fact, a lot of the stuff that I read this week is kind of outside of that realm. Simply because that's what I like. I mean, I'm a big fan of superhero comics, but I like stories that can stretch their legs as well. And this is, it's an interesting structure. I think most interesting and kind of jarring, the narration boxes in Conan are actually done in what looks like a typewriter face, because they want to capture that feel of those old Robert E. Howard novels. And so it feels like that 1920s, 1930s style writing, and it looks like it in the way that it's written. So props to the letterer, Richard Starkings and Comicraft. Props to you guys for doing great lettering in this issue that worked better than I thought it would, because when I first saw it, it was kind of jarring, but it actually worked really well. So I'm giving an adore it to Conan the Barbarian. You should definitely go pick it up if you're looking for something new. Next up is another Dark Horse. It's the zero issue of a new monthly series called The Creep. This was an interesting issue. It was written by John Arcudi with art by Jonathan Case. And I didn't get a whole lot of information in this issue, but it's definitely an interesting story. It's about a guy who's a private investigator who gets a letter from his former girlfriend from college, asking for help, trying to figure out what happened in her son's suicide. There's been 2 suicides within 6 months of each other, 2 best friends, and there may or may not be something suspicious or sinister going on. The main character is a really interesting guy. Oxel is his name, and he has what's called acromegaly, which means that he's got crazy growth hormones, and so his face is like enormous. He looks kind of like a Cro-Magnon man instead of a normal human being. So it's really interesting in the art department. Every time he the art is really phenomenal. Every time that Jonathan Case draws Stephanie, the former girlfriend, it's done in a very different art style, even on the same page as drawings of Oxel. And the whole thing works together really well because of that. There's a lot of warmth. There's a lot of light pencil work in the sections where Stephanie is. And then it's just mostly just bleak and very washed out with very heavy lines wherever Oxel is. I would give this issue an explore it. I'm really curious to see where they go once the monthly starts. This was a zero issue worth picking up. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it was worth my $3. It wasn't a perfect book, but it's definitely an interesting starting point. Don't be put off by the creepy Frank Miller cover. It actually is a pretty good book. And next up, my last Dark Horse book is a book called, it's the third issue of The Massive, which I talked last month about picking up the first two issues. This is a really interesting series. Like I've mentioned previously, it doesn't feel, and once again, it doesn't feel like a normal superhero book. It concerns these environmentalists who, after over a year has of crazy, unexplainable and natural events have caused all sorts of chaos all over the planet, flooding and natural disasters that are just like unimaginable. And they're still just looking for their sister ship. It was a good close to the first arc. This is another Brian Wood book, the same guy who wrote Conan. And it was solid. I really enjoyed it, but it's still not something that really, really catches my eye every single time I pick it up. I'm glad that I'm getting it, but it's not a perfect book. So I would still give it an explore it. I'm curious to see where it goes. There are some, you find out some more about some of the characters who we haven't really seen too much of before. And it ends with some very sinister questions that don't have any answers yet. So I'm curious to see where it goes. I like this book. I don't love it, but I like it quite a bit. So it's worth checking out if you're into environmentalism or post-apocalyptic books or any of that kind of stuff. I would definitely give it an explore it, but I thought it was pretty solid. All right, next up, this feels weird. I'm going to just say that right now. It feels weird to not have Darren to bounce back and forth with. I have a feeling this is going to be a pretty short episode just because I'm getting through stuff a lot quicker than I would when I have, you know, someone to talk to about it. Next up, let's talk some DC Comics. I only got two DC books this week, Batgirl and Batman. And Batgirl, let's start there, actually is guest starring Batwoman in this issue, which, if you haven't been able to tell already, that every time I mention Batwoman, I gush about her. Batwoman is one of my very favorite superheroes. She's one of the reasons that I got back into collecting superhero monthly titles, is because I'd heard so many good things about her, and she had just restarted in the New 52, and it was a great stepping on point for me. So I was excited to see her here because I've liked Batgirl, but it has never been up to the storytelling caliber of Batwoman, simply because that's not the kind of stories that Barbara Gordon deals with. But here, this was a really solid issue. I liked it quite a bit. Gail Simone did some really solid writing. I feel like she captured Kate Kane's voice rather well. And I believe this is the last issue. If not, there's maybe one more issue where we get Ardian Seoff as the penciler. He, I feel like, has done pretty solid work on this title. And so I'm kind of sad to see him go, but it's been good. I definitely felt the specter of Batwoman hanging over this book. There were a lot of panel layouts that felt like they'd been cribbed definitely from J.H. Williams III's style of paneling rather than what we're used to seeing in this book, especially the splash page when Batwoman is diving through a window into this house. It's really astonishing looking. It really looks great, and it looks like something that you expect from J.H. Williams. And that it felt like Batwoman because of that. There's a little bit of silly fighting in between Batwoman and Batgirl, because that's what happens whenever two heroes seem to stumble onto one another. And frankly, Batwoman can kick Batgirl's butt, you know? Kate Kane can kick Barbara Gordon's butt any day of the week. Even though Barbara's like, I've learned all about her. I have this dossier with information on her. She does not know what she's really talking about. There's a part where she gets kneed in the gut by Batwoman, and her little narration box says, "Note to self, remember to update combat appraisal of Batwoman ASAP." Because Barbara thinks she can take her, and no, nobody can take Kate Kane, baby. Nobody can take Kate Kane. Anyway, it moved the bigger storyline of Nightfall forward. I liked that Batgirl and Batwoman were working together. I like that, you know, Barbara was finally able to get the upper hand on some of these vigilantes she's been fighting for the last two issues. So it was a solid book. I liked it. I'll give it an explore it. It ended on a really big cliffhanger. So just like I mentioned last week, this is one of those places where I'm really annoyed that I have to wait two more months to find out the resolution for this story because of the Zero issue next month. Am I excited to see Batgirl's origin in the New 52? You bet I am. But I just wish that rather than do them all in the same month, they maybe had an edict to put them out when the next arc was over with, you know? So we could get a Batwoman one this month and a Batgirl one in 2 months. Or a Batman one. Well, I'll talk about Batman. It'll fit fine to have the Batman one next month. But this one ended on enough of a cliffhanger that I'm kind of annoyed. But I give this book an explore it. It's another solid entry. I really love Gail's voice for Barbara Gordon. And Ardian Siaf has been a pretty competent artist, so I'm going to miss him. Ed Benes is going to be taking over the book, for better or for worse. Sometimes I really like Ed Benes' art. Sometimes I don't like it as much. So we'll see how I feel about it. All right, next up, like I said, is Batman. This is basically, it serves as an epilogue and wrap-up to the whole Night of the Owls situation that went on for 11 issues. They gave Greg Capullo a break, like I mentioned, and Becky Cloonan does most of the art in this issue, and it looks just great. Here we're finally introduced to the character of Harper Row, who we saw a bit in, I believe it was issue 6 or issue 7 of Batman, and we also saw a cameo of her in the very first issue of the reboot of Batman. She was shown as one of these four characters, the other three of which have been very influential and very important in the arc of the Court of the Owls. So a lot of fans were curious who this person was and why she merited being drawn in that very first issue. And so it was cool to finally see who Harper was and why she's important. She did save Batman's life that one time after he had been trapped by the court, which was really great. And, you know, when I first heard about this storyline, I guess Scott Snyder's goal was to have this be Cassandra Cain and to be Cassandra Cain's reintroduction into the DC universe, but DC editorial wouldn't let that happen. Apparently they might have other plans for Cass Kane. I can only hope that this means that she still is functioning in some capacity as a part of Batman Incorporated. For those of you who don't know, Cassandra Cain was the second Batgirl. She came out during No Man's Land because Batman wasn't around and she felt like somebody needed to be the protector of the people. And so she came out back in like 1998, 1999, and served as Batgirl for quite a long while, until she moved on to other things. She became the Black Bat, that was her moniker, and she was the Batman Incorporated agent in Hong Kong before the reboot. If we read Batman Incorporated, we can see her. So hopefully this means Cass Kane is still doing something like that since we didn't get her here. But that's not important. What is important is that Harper is here, and Harper is a very interesting character. She and her brother have a very close relationship and a very loving relationship, and you can feel it between the two of them. And it's just, it's an interesting side glance at a lot of the things that have happened in issue 1, in issue 3, and an introduction to a character who I hope we see a lot of. She's just a really interesting character. I liked her. So I hope to see more of her. I would give this issue an adore it simply because I really liked Harper Row a lot as a character. And I say really too much on this podcast. I liked Harper quite a bit, and I liked her brother, and I hope to see more of them. She's a dynamic and versatile character. So here's to hoping we'll see her around some more. So I adored Batman this week. And hopefully the Zero issue will be good. It'll be interesting to see what part of his origin gets covered in the Zero issue, since everybody knows Batman's origin. But we'll see what happens next month. All right, and now on to Marvel. Only three books from Marvel this month, two of which were very, very good, and one of which was just whatever, and I wish I hadn't spent the $5 I spent on it. But hey, buyer's remorse is buyer's remorse. The first issue I'll talk about is Captain America, number 16. This, as I mentioned, I think 2 weeks ago, this is wrapping up Brubaker's run on Captain America, and it's pretty big stuff. Like, large, large things are happening. There's still this personality on TV who is disparaging and demonizing Captain America. He's revealed to be a robot of some ilk in this issue. But the important thing is public opinion is at an all-time low regarding Captain America. And the issue actually ends with a mob of people beating up Captain America. And it ends at a very, very low place. So I'm curious to see how Brubaker is going to tie this all up in, I think, only two, maybe three more issues. I think he's ending. Yeah, I think three more issues, one next month and two in October, and then we're done with Brubaker's almost decade-long run on Captain America. And so it's been redefining for the character. He has made Cap who he is for a lot of the last decade, and which has influenced as much in the comics as much as it has in his cinematic portrayal. So I'm going to miss Brubaker on this book. I'm excited to see what Rick Remender does on the new Cap book, but I'm going to give this issue an adore. These last two issues have been a very interesting storyline, unlike anything we've seen since the reboot last year. And this is a good issue. It's very, very, very solid. It's, yeah. And you get to see Dum Dum. You get to see Agent 13, who is Sharon Carter. It's just a win all around. It's a good book. So adore it. Next up is a Daredevil annual. Sometimes annuals work really well, and sometimes annuals don't work at all. For example, I can only think of two annuals I've purchased in the last year or so. One was Animal Man, and one was Batman. Both of which were very good. Animal Man's told a story of the Avatar of the Red and the Avatar of the Green getting together to battle the Rot over 100 years ago. It was interesting backstory that kind of showed us what we could expect when Swamp Thing and Animal Man finally got together. Batman's was a really fascinating story about Mr. Freeze, and it completely transformed Mr. Freeze's character for the New 52. So it was very important and very influential. Daredevil Annual, it just didn't work for me at all. Alan Davis was the writer and the penciler. I mean, it's great looking. Don't get me wrong. It looks really good. But it's starring some guy named Clandestine, who's part of this weird clan of people named the Destines, who are like weird half demons or, yeah. It just didn't work for me. I didn't like it. I didn't feel like Daredevil acted like himself. Doctor Strange was in here, and I hate Doctor Strange. Every time he appears, I'm just like, oh, great. The power is mystic. This is going to be a fun comic. He just doesn't work for me as a character, and neither did this Clandestine guy. It just, I just didn't like it. It was a waste of my $5. It didn't work for me. I didn't like it at all. Maybe, I don't know if Darren picked it up or not. I know he's been picking up the Daredevil book, so I don't know if he'll bother with the annual. I just feel like Mark Waid has spoiled us into seeing a side and a type of Daredevil that we're just not getting here, and it's so just whatever. Don't bother with it. Unless you're like an avid Daredevil fan and have to own every single thing with Daredevil's face on it, don't bother with this. Save your $5. And then last but not least, issue 4 of Spider-Man, the crossover between Peter Parker from the regular Marvel Universe and Miles Morales from the Ultimate Universe. As I mentioned last month, it ends with Peter standing on the front or in front of the house of Aunt May, and it ended really poignantly, issue 3 did. And issue 4 picks up right there. And it's beautiful and it's poignant. And I'm going to be honest, I loved this issue because there was not a single superhero fight in it. All this was Peter talking to the Gwen Stacy and Aunt May of this world, of the Ultimate Universe, and explaining how things are different and keeping some things to himself. He doesn't tell Gwen, for example, that Gwen is his first love and that she died because of him. He keeps that to himself. But there's some really great character moments as they speak. And as, you know, Miles starts to hang out with Gwen and Aunt May as well. I think that there's a real chance to develop a really rich friendship and relationship between Aunt May and Gwen Stacy. Apparently Gwen Stacy, whose dad, of course, has died and whose mother has disappeared, she lives in the Ultimate Universe. She has moved in with Peter and Aunt May. So now that Peter's gone, she's the one who lives with and helps take care of Aunt May, which I just thought was beautiful and poignant. And so I hope that Miles is able to foment a relationship with them, which hopefully, I mean, that's what we're seeing at the end of issue 13 of Ultimate Spider-Man, which, like I say, I believe takes place after Spider-Man. So I hope that that friendship will continue. I just really loved the conversations between Aunt May and Peter, and how she's able to get some closure here. She wasn't able to ever say goodbye to Peter. She never got to tell him how much she loved him and to say goodbye before he died. And so this is able to give her a lot of closure. And, you know, Peter gets to figure out some funky things like, hey, in this universe, I dated Kitty Pryde. What is going on? Like, it's a great issue. Also, I think that we've introduced Miles Morales to the web shooter. So I think that we should see the web shooter from now on in Ultimate Spider-Man. Because, of course, he is 13 and doesn't have the smarts that Peter Parker has. So he hasn't been able to develop his own web shooters. But Pete has introduced him to it. And I think it's something that we'll see more often. There's a really touching scene where MJ comes over and just sees Peter and then disappears. And she's just sobbing in an alleyway. And it's just, I don't know. It's just a beautiful issue. It's a beautiful character piece. Like I say, there's not a punch thrown in the entire issue. But it ends with a bang, and it ends with the two Spider-Men and Thor and Iron Man going to find Mysterio and shut this dimensional portal down, so that Peter can get back to the regular universe and there's no more interdimensional travel. It's really, really good. I am sad that, because for a while this was a twice monthly thing. It came out every 2 weeks. I'm sad that they're going to make me wait till next month for the conclusion to this. I was hoping that we'd get the conclusion in two weeks, but we're going to have to wait a month, and it should be worth it. It should be a lot of fun to finally see how this whole thing wraps up. I would definitely, obviously, give it an explore it, or not an explore it, an adore it. I don't know why I said explore it. Obviously, this is an adore it. It was a beautiful book. It was one of the best books that I read this week. All right, so to wrap this up really quick, to wrap up my half of the podcast, I'll explain really quick my hero and villain moments of the week. My hero moment of the week, I actually have two, and I'm going to cheat because Darren's not here to complain about it. So I'm going to mention two hero moments of the week. The first one is in Spider-Man, which I just mentioned. It's right after, as Aunt May is not sure how to process. She faints after first meeting Peter, and she doesn't quite know how to process this whole thing as she talks to him for a couple of pages. And so she, you know, he explains to her that I needed to see what my life was like in this world. And so Aunt May says to him, do you have a me where you come from? And he explains that she and Uncle Ben had raised him, and then tells her that it's because of Uncle Ben and his passing that he does what he does. And he says, with great power, and she cuts him off, comes great responsibility. Yeah. And then she just says, oh my God, it is you. Look at you. And there's this panel where she just hugs him, just grabs him, and it's beautiful. And, you know, it's just, it's a really, really solid, solid piece of comic writing.
Welcome, welcome to another edition of Between the Bubbles podcast. I am Darren, and unfortunately, my good friend and fellow panelist Brayden is not sitting next to me because he is at a wedding for his brother-in-law. So, good news for him. Congratulations to the family. Bad news for me because this means that I can geek out with Brayden for an hour like we usually do. So, we're riding solo this week. And so what we decided to do is individually we were going to record our reviews and the titles that we picked up. So some of the things, just to give you a heads up of what I got, was, of course, I got Batman, I got Spider-Man issue 4. I picked up the Daredevil Annual and then also decided to explore some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to go in for some nostalgic feelings there, because I am one of those people who grew up on the cartoon. I loved pizza as a kid because, well, the Ninja Turtles ate pizza, so why the heck not? And anyway, and of course some other titles, but before I get started, I wanted to discuss some news that I heard yesterday about the possibility of Ben Affleck actually directing the Justice League movie. And I'm sure this is going to be pretty controversial. I wanted to share some of my thoughts on it, at least. And yeah, so at first I was a little surprised and a little taken back by it, because of all the people to have direct the Justice League movie, his name wasn't even a thought. Ben Affleck has directed good amount of movies. He's always gotten pretty good acclaim for what he's done. The thing that surprises me with him being tied to the Justice League movie is he's never directed a big blockbuster movie, and a lot of his movies have always been grounded in reality. And we know that Warner Brothers is going to take more of a grittier, serious tone with the Justice League movie, I think, as a counterbalance to what Marvel has done, which has been the lighter side, the more comedic side. And it makes sense, because a lot of the movies that Ben Affleck has done has dealt more with kind of the darker elements of storytelling. So on that part, it makes sense. And when you think about it, Joss Whedon had not done any blockbuster movies at all. But it did make more sense with him, because he did write the Uncanny X-Men comic books. He'd done a lot of more of the sci-fi stuff with like Firefly and Serenity. And, you know, Buffy is all about characters and working many characters to make sure they had their moment to shine. And he did that in Firefly and Serenity. So it made sense that he was doing the Avengers. Ben Affleck still kind of doesn't make sense, but I'm actually looking forward to seeing where it goes. If he is selected, hey, I'm all aboard on that one. The only thing that I'm hesitant about is I'm not sure if I want him actually in the Justice League movie. Ben Affleck, from my knowledge, has always acted in the movies that he's directed or done the screenplay for, and I just don't know where I could see him being in the movie. I don't want him as one of the Justice League members, because I want Green Lantern to be Ryan Reynolds. I want Batman. It would be great if it was Christian Bale. I don't think it will be, but I don't want him to be Batman, because we saw him as Daredevil, and that interpretation of Daredevil was very dark and moody, just like Batman would be, and it just didn't work. He didn't pull it off very well. I don't see him as Barry Allen, because I think it will be Barry Allen. I don't think it'll be Wally West, because I think Hal Jordan will be that character who's the wisecracking, cocky, sarcastic character, and that's what Wally West is, and so you can't have two characters who are very similar. So I think they're going to do the Barry Allen route, and Barry Allen is very sincere, very humble, and just a amazing, great, good person. And I don't, not saying that Ben Affleck isn't a great, amazing, good person, I just don't see him being able to pull it off in a believable fashion. So I don't know. And you know, of course he's not going to be Superman, because they already have, hopefully they have the actor who's playing Clark Kent in Man of Steel will be in the Justice League. So that's my only hesitation, is I don't want to see him as an actor in the movie, unless he's a minor character. You know, if they have Steve and Trevor, I could see him actually playing a good Steve and Trevor. I think he'd do a great job. It's a minor enough character where it's not stealing the show and he's not on the screen a lot, but it's also an important character. So that works. So those are just my thoughts with Ben Affleck being part of the discussion, and it sounds like the front runner to direct the Justice League movie. So now we're moving on to reviews. To start off with DC, I picked up Batgirl, and you know what? I've been really on the fence with this series. I am going to drop it after issue 13 when the Nightfall arc ends. All that being said, I really, really liked this issue. The artwork was really great. I love the cover. I mean, you have Batgirl and Batwoman duking it out, and it's just drawn beautifully. It really just draws your attention to what's going on. And inside the story, you do have Barbara Gordon and Kate Kane duking it out in the issue, which is what I think we all wanted to see, and it doesn't disappoint. Nightfall becomes a more intriguing character, which, for me, that's the big gripe with Batgirl, is I don't feel like the villains are that engaging, or I'm not that interested in them, at least. But Nightfall is getting a little bit more depth to her, so I want to see where this goes. And then they tie in James Gordon. I'm not going to say how, but he's been kind of splashed here and there in some past issues. They haven't really dived into what's going on. Been very brief, you know, cameos, but now you're starting to see his involvement in everything, and I'm really interested to see where it goes. I'm going to give this issue and adore it. I really, really enjoyed it. That being said, I'm going to drop it after issue 13 because there's other titles I want to explore, but if you're a Batgirl fan, if you're a Barbara Gordon fan, which Gail Simone has done a beautiful job of, I think, making Barbara Gordon relatable. Not because she doesn't have superpowers, but who she is as a person. She really cares about the individuals of Gotham City. She cares about the people who can't protect themselves. And I really like reading about her thought process of why she's trying to help people and how she cares about people. And you see that in this issue. So that was a home run there. But once again, overall, I know that this series is not something that I'm totally engaged in. So I am going to drop it after issue 13, like I said, but this one, issue 12, totally adore it. Next is Batman issue 12. This is a very important issue because it is the first time that a female artist has drawn for a main Batman title, which is kind of crazy to me to think that there's never been a female artist for Batman. I don't know why that is. I mean, he's been around for so long, and you see a lot more female artists now in the medium, in the industry. I'm kind of shocked that it took till 2012 for this to happen. All that being said, Becky Cloonan did a fantastic job. I really thought she did a great job of showing the warmth to Harper Row. Harper Row and her brother grow up in the Narrows, and obviously she's very edgy. She has a rough life. But I feel like Becky does a good job of showing that there's warmth to her, which just, it's weird because her physical appearance, I mean, she has piercings and she has, you know, a different hairstyle and whatnot. But just the way that Becky draws her makes her seem like she's not all just rough edges. And I feel like the second artist, Andy Clark, wasn't able to capture that with Harper Row, and his style is very different from Becky's, and it was a little jarring. So I didn't really care for his style. And I think it is because, as I said, Becky really showed just through how she was able to draw Harper to show that there wasn't just this, she wasn't all just dark and edge. And I really thought Becky Cloonan did a phenomenal job. She really, for being the first female artist, I bet it was a little scary because who knows what people will think, and it's the first time for everything, and she nailed it. And then Scott Snyder and James Tynion IV helps out with some writing duties later on in the issue. They just make me want to really explore who Harper Row is. I hope they introduce her again in later issues because she was written very well, very interesting, very engaging. And this issue deals a lot with our modern-day issues of hate crimes towards people who, just because of who they are. And whenever you deal with those issues, it's very easy to make it corny or just kind of lame, which is too bad because they're real life issues that we deal with either in our individual lives, either through family members and friends, or what you see on the news. And Scott Snyder, though, he tackles it in a great way, and it actually really hits the emotional mark that it's trying to hit. And they're very successful at it. So I'm going to give this issue a total adore it. I thought it's a great fresh breath air after the whole Court of Owls series that happened the last 11 issues, and it's a very standalone issue. So if you haven't been following Batman, I really recommend you pick this up because you won't be disappointed. It's a very different Batman tale because it hardly deals with Batman, and it was phenomenal. Scott Snyder once again out of the park. The next one, Batman and Robin, issue 12. This is a series that I really was hard against last month because I had expectations when it talked about Damon fighting all the Robins, and then that didn't happen in issue 11. I was a little disappointed because I had some expectations to see him go one by one and tackle these different Robins and see what the interactions are like. Because let's face it, Damian is just, he is one of the coolest Robins because he's so lethal and just so matter of fact. And he really doesn't have, he only has morals because I think he feels entitled. He should, and he owes it to his dad, Bruce. So I'm really drawn into Damian. So I wanted to see his interaction with the other Robins in a combat setting. And I know we've seen it a little bit in the past, but I just think it would have been fun in the current New 52. So when it didn't happen last issue, a little disappointed. But all that was washed away with this issue. Terminus was a great villain. Batman sports a whole new armored suit that was just fun to see. And this issue was a full-out blockbuster brawl. The only complaint I have is this would have been a great story arc over 4 or 5 issues because the ending was just huge and big in scope. And it would have been fun to see it develop a little bit more. And so that's my only gripe, but you know what? It's okay. This issue, once again, I'm going to give him a door. I want to reread issue 10 and 11 now knowing what I know because I know that my expectations are going to be a lot different going into issue 11 than they were last month. So if you're a Batman fan, if you're a Damian fan, even if you're a Robin fan, to see all the Robins come together and help each other out and their interactions, it was great. If we were doing a normal podcast and we had a hero moment of the week, that would be my hero moment. It was just so great to see their interaction. And who doesn't like to see Dick Grayson and Damian have that older brother, younger brother relationship? And you see that in this issue. Next up, moving on to IDW, and like I talked about, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. As I said, I was a huge fan. I loved Raphael. I ate pizza all the time because of the Ninja Turtles. And I knew about this series. I was a little hesitant because, you know, the old movies do not stand the test of time. If any of you have seen Ninja Turtles 1 or Ninja Turtles 2 or 3, they're not very good. So I just didn't really know what to expect. I decided to fork out some cash to check these out. I will say this. These were great. The art is not phenomenal, but it totally works. The writing is not great, but it's fun. Yeah, some of the dialogue is cheesy, but it's Ninja Turtles. What do you expect? I picked up issues 10, 11, and 12, and you don't have to know any of the other what's going on previously because they catch you up. They do a brief synopsis in the cover page. And this is where Shredder and Splinter are interacting for, it looks like, the first time in recent months. They go into their past history and what happened, which I thought was great. And now you're seeing it all come together, and you have, through these three issues, a lot of internal turmoil with Splinter and making the right choices with defending his honor. And then you also see just these all-out brawls with the Ninja Turtles and the Foot Clan and Shredder and Splinter, and it was great. This is a series that I'm actually going to add to my pull list, so you will be hearing from future reviews of the Ninja Turtles because it was a fun read. If you're a Ninja Turtle fan as a kid, I don't know if you're going to love this series like I do, at least for these three that I checked out, but I do think you need to give it a shot because if not, you're doing yourself a disservice. this feels like an adult version of the Ninja Turtles that we loved as kids. So definitely check it out. Next up is the Daredevil Annual. Man, this is tough because as Brain and I have been saying, we love what Mark Waid has been doing on Daredevil. And I didn't know, I'm going to give you all fair warning now, if you haven't picked this up yet, this was not written by Mark Waid. It was written by someone else, and it shows. Because the dialogue was corny, the story was lame, there's just one new character after another, and it was kind of just, I don't know, boom, 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 sequence after sequence after sequence. It didn't flow very well. And I had a really hard time getting through it. Actually, I texted Braden halfway through, just like, I'm done. I have 20 more pages to go, and I'm done. I don't want to finish this, but I feel like I have to because I knew I was going to review it. And you never want to feel like that through a comic book, especially when you paid $5. There's other things I would have rather bought with $5. I would have rather gone to Wendy's and got their W Burger, which if none of you have had, or any of you have had, endorse Wendy's, it was great. But I would have rather done that. I mean, it was just, you really feel really upset when you've spent $5 on a comic book you didn't like because it's $5. I understand $3, I can sometimes understand $4, but $5 on a crappy issue, it kind of ruins your night. So stay away from the Daredevil Annual. I'm going to give a huge ignore it. Not even worth, even if you're a Daredevil fan, and you collect everything, and you're one of those people who just feels like you have to have every issue, just, it's not worth it at all. At all, at all, at all. Just stay away. It was so bad. I would have rather spent my $5 on McDonald's Big Mac and had diarrhea than spend my $5 on this. It was terrible. Anyway, last up is Spider-Man issue 4 by Brian Michael Bendis. And Brayden and I have, we were telling each other this afternoon that this is not only one of the best issues that we read this week, this is one of the best issues that we read probably this year. This was everything that you want in a comic book. It had comedy, it had emotions, it didn't have action, but that was okay. I mean, it had a lot of character development. There's so many times, because Peter Parker in the Ultimate Universe, as we know, is dead. So when we get to see him interact with Aunt May and Gwen Stacy and Mary Jane, and what does that mean to these characters? And there's these moments, especially for me, with Aunt May and Peter Parker, that just almost brought me to tears. It was so well written and so well done, and just pulling on your emotional heartstrings, that how do you not love this issue? And of course, the artwork was phenomenal, and I cannot wait till issue 5 comes out. And you know what? This is one of those stories that everyone needs to get. Everyone. Spider-Man fan or not, Marvel fan or not, this is it. There's certain stories in comic books that you can show people that let them know comic books are more than just people in tights punching each other. Comic books can be great stories just like you find in movies, just like you find in novels. And this is one of those stories. And go to your comic book store tomorrow, or even today if you're listening in the daytime, and get it now. If you have to wait to get the past issues that they sold out, do it, order them. Do not miss out on this series. This is one of the best stories I have ever read. And not just in a comic book, but I'm talking about in anything. It is everything, as I said, everything that I want. Totally adore it. Last up, just real quick, want to talk about some iPad games I picked up through Warner Bros. And DC that they've done. And the first one is TDKR. It's for The Dark Knight Rises that they released. It's $7. And, of course, with anything that you get in the iPad, the downloadable game, it's always more because they want you to download, the tokens or coins or whatever it is that you can get upgrades and gadgets and whatnot. And so you can spend up, if you wanted to, $10 to $12 on this game. You know what, I'm going to give it a total ignore it, stay away. It has a lot of potential, but it doesn't reach the potential at all. It wants to be an iPad version of Batman Arkham Asylum or Batman Arkham City, in the sense for how the combat mechanics are and the free flow, but it doesn't pull off very well. It's very awkward. The camera angle you actually move by swiping your finger on the screen, which sounds great as an idea. It's not pulled off well in execution, and the voice acting for Bane and Batman especially is just embarrassing, and the dialogue is awful, and the graphics are bad. It's not worth your $7. Stay away. It just, trust me on that one. The second one, though, is a Justice League game called Justice League Earth's Final Defense. That one, you need to get and check out. I don't know how much it is now. When I got it, it was $3, and totally worth it. I did spend $2 more because I bought The Flash and I bought Green Lantern, because you start out with Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman as, you know, the trinity of comics. And the Green Lantern and Flash you buy for $1 each. And Green Lantern, he's kind of fun to play. You know, I'm a big Green Lantern fan, so I enjoyed it. But if you're not a Green Lantern fan, you could probably be fine without it. But Flash, on the other hand, Flash is a blast. Didn't mean to rhyme there. But they just take total advantage of his speed powers. And I cannot tell you how fun it is to just see him just womp on people at, you know, the speed of light, and he just running around the screen. He's my favorite character to play, him and Batman. Wonder Woman and Superman, they do an okay job, but Batman and especially the Flash are just total worth the $3. And the game plays a lot like, if you've ever played Marvel Ultimate Alliance 1 or 2, it's a lot like that. You have characters, you build them up, you get skill points, you get different powers. You can choose what powers and abilities you want to increase with experience points. You also can get cards as you progress in the game through different characters that give you different attributes. And you have to buy the costumes, but the different costumes that they have different abilities. So as I said, it's a lot like Marvel Ultimate Alliance. It's one of those games where I hope that they actually put it on a console, because this is one of those things where if you had better graphics, if you had multiplayer, especially multiplayer, and you can have more characters in the game, it could be amazing. Because can you imagine if you had a game with DC characters like Aquaman, Martian Manhunter? It'd be fun to have Plastic Man, Cyborg. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. It's a tease to play something like this that is so great on the iPad. When, come on, Warner Brothers, do something where you can put on the Xbox 360, the Wii U when it comes out, or the PS3, and make it happen, because it was amazing, and I'm going to give it a total adore it. So, anyway, that's for me this week, and definitely shoot us through Twitter at BTWNBBLS. You can also follow me at Twitter. I'm DarinDevore. At Darren DeVore. Braden is at Santorino. You can find our names on our description on the Between the Bubbles Twitter. Also, you can shoot us an email at BetweenTheBubblesPodcast@gmail.com and our Facebook page, Between the Bubbles. And let us know if you agree, disagree with the reviews. Let us know if there's any comics that you're reading that we haven't looked at. Let us know, and we'll definitely talk about it, because we're all about spreading the love here of comics. So, have a great week, and happy reading.
Hey, you know the drill by now. Almost Midnight Media produced this podcast. I, Braden, am the editor, and it's released under a Creative Commons license, you know, normal stuff.